We'll have the money angle this morning on Scotland voting to stay united with the kingdom. From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. As we've been hearing, voters in Scotland have rejected independence, 55% to 45%. Politics is the power to allocate resources, part of what analysts say this referendum was about. BBC economics correspondent Simon Jack joins us from a trading floor in the UK's financial district. Simon, good morning.
Good morning, David.
A lot of the British political establishment had tried to make the argument that business in Scotland and the Scottish economy might suffer if Scotland were to leave. To what extent do you think that economic argument held sway?
The business community was pretty reluctant to get involved, but when it looked like the yes vote had a real chance, some of the big heavyweight companies, the BPs, the Shells, who are big in the North Sea, obviously there's a big argument when it came up to dividing up the oil assets, they came off the fence and said, look, this would be bad for the whole of the United Kingdom. And I think that did scare some people. The markets today have given this a pretty warm welcome. Stocks have rallied. At first, the value of the pound went up against both the dollar and the euro. So, you know, the big massive questions, who owns what currency would the country use, have largely now been filed in that bottom drawer for the next 20 to 25 years. So some clarity has emerged.
Now you say 25 years. British Prime Minister Cameron thinks this indeed could put off some kind of repeat of this referendum campaign for Scotland for a long time. You know, there's a debate, a lifetime, a generation. But that may depend on whether London delivers on those political and economic promises it made to persuade Scottish voters to stay.
At the last gasp of this campaign, a rather hastily put together, some would say, package of measures was agreed, devolving additional powers to tax and to spend money to not just to Scotland, but it now looks as if those same powers are going to be devolved to Wales and Northern Ireland. Now, some economic uncertainty about how that plays out will still remain. And don't forget, we also have the small matter of a general election coming up in May of next year. So we're not out of the woods yet, but the big, big issues can be put to one side for now.
BBC economics correspondent Simon Jack, thank you very much.
Thank you, David.
Spanish bonds, as well as stocks, are up sharply this morning. Spain has its own separatist movement, and the result in Scotland is seen as diminishing momentum for Catalonia to break off from Spain. The British pound is up 0.33% against the euro, but pretty flat to the dollar now. Now time for the Marketplace Inflation Calculator. As Marketplace celebrates its 25th birthday this year, we're looking at the surprising, sometimes delightful, and sometimes destructive ways that prices have changed during that quarter century. Something that must have gotten more expensive over the last 25 years, the family car. Take the best-selling car in America right now, the Honda Accord. Back in 1989, the cheapest Accord sedan version had just 98 horsepower, no ABS brakes, and the windows rolled down by hand. Honda's suggested price with stick shift and no AC was $11,770. 25 years later, what about the cheapest Accord sedan they sell now?
I'm Joe Chacha. I'm the general manager of Honda Manhattan. This car is fully equipped with airbags front, side, and back.
A compatible Bluetooth device is required.
The other thing that's pretty cool about this, which definitely wasn't around 89, is you do have Bluetooth standard in the car.
The cheapest Accord now is nearly a foot longer, has 185 instead of 98 horsepower, yet its fuel economy is better. List price now, $21,955 with a stick. But here's what happens when we adjust for inflation. The sticker price now is like $11,500 back in 1989, meaning in constant dollars, the Accord is essentially the same price, cheaper even, for a car with, get this, electric windows.
All you have to do is just press the button, or you could just press it once and it goes right down.
So, Joe, what do you think about that? The base Honda Accord 25 years ago, when you adjust for inflation, was pretty much the same price as what you're selling your base model now for, maybe even a little bit more expensive.
You've seen just some of the features, but performance-wise, it's a lot more than you actually were getting 25 years ago.
But you and I both know the cost of driving isn't just the car's price, it's also everything else. The American Automobile Association every year publishes a cost of driving index. John Nielsen is managing director, automotive engineering and repair at the AAA.
The gasoline you put in it, the tires you put on it, how much it costs to maintain and repair the car.
Beyond the price of the car, what's the biggest component? A lot of people are going to think fuel.
It's depreciation. The residual value, or what your car is worth when you go to sell it, usually costs you twice as much as putting fuel in the car for the life. It's a huge component.
And there's less depreciation now as cars get better and last longer. Something else that's cheaper, financing. In 1989, AAA figured the interest rate on a typical car loan was 11%. These days, some buyers can get an APR of less than 1% on an Accord. Altogether, this year, the AAA figures a medium sedan, like an Accord, will cost 59 cents a mile to operate, assuming 15,000 miles a year. Same assumptions in 1989, 31 cents a mile. Adjust the 2014 figure for inflation, and you get the same 31 cents a mile, this despite gas and maintenance going up.
There's some slight variations, but in a macro sense, it's real consistent over time.
Now, if your tastes in transportation have gotten fancier, and for you it's got to be a Caddy or a Volvo, then yes, it got more expensive to drive in the last 25 years. But it may be what's been taking a bigger bite out of the paycheck has less to do with your car and more to do with, perhaps, health care. More on that as our Inflation Calculator series continues in the coming weeks. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.